Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Thursday, June 30th, 2016, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Well, welcome everybody to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call. We're going to be discussing the FCC's set-top box rules. My name is Will Courtney, and I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Group here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Additionally, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we're pleased to have Alex Aculiar serving as the moderator and interviewer for the program. So I'll stop here and turn things over to him for further introductions, and we look forward to answering audience questions at about the 40-minute mark of today's call. With that, Alex, the floor is yours.
Thanks a lot, Will. Good afternoon, everyone. And again, welcome to today's Federalist Society Teleforum. Again, I'm Alex Aculiar. I am honored today to be speaking with Commissioner Ajit Pai from the FCC on an important topic, which is the FCC's television set-top box proposal, which looks to transform the paid TV industry and spur competition for television set-top boxes that sit in so many of our living rooms. We will explore today the FCC's proposal, the implications it might have on consumer privacy, advertising, competition, and other issues, as well as the current state of play with the proposal and whether a compromise might be possible. After that, we'll be opening things up for audience Q&A. So let me give a brief bit of background about our distinguished speaker today. Commissioner Pai was nominated to the FCC by President Obama in 2012. He has been focused over the last 4 years on creating a regulatory environment at the FCC in which both competition and innovation are going to flourish and hopefully benefiting the American consumer. He believes it is vital for the FCC to adopt policies that will give firms strong incentives to raise and invest capital, to develop new products and services, and to compete aggressively in established as well as new markets. He has spent his tenure focusing on greater regulatory predictability and transparency to allow for greater gains and incentives for businesses to invest and take risks in markets. Prior to being a commissioner, Commissioner Pai held several positions in the FCC's Office of General Counsel. He served most prominently as Deputy General Counsel, where he had supervisory responsibility over several dozen lawyers and worked on a wide range of issues. Before his time in the General Counsel's office, Commissioner Pai worked in the private sector, both as a partner at a large D.C. law firm, General Block, and also in-house at a large telecommunications company. He has spent time at the Department of Justice's Antitrust Division, as well as working on the Hill. So thank you again, Commissioner, for joining us, and welcome.
Thanks, Alex, for having me, and thanks as well to the Federal Society for hosting us.
So, Commissioner, let's begin with a little bit of background for folks who may not be that familiar with the FCC's proposal and, indeed, what's going on with the set-top boxes that are in so many of our homes. What is the proposal that's currently on the table?
So the proposal relates to, as you pointed out, the set-top box, which is the device that many Americans have sitting next to or theoretically on top of their televisions at home. And according to the FCC's proposal, cable operators and other multi-channel video programming distributors, which is a term of art in the FCC world, MVPDs, they would be required to supply certain information in formats that conform to specifications set by open standards body, according to the majority. Now, what is that information? Well, there are three different buckets that that cable operators and other MVPDs would have to supply. First, content delivery data, which is the video programming itself, the thing that you're watching. Secondly, there would be service discovery data, which is some of the detail that goes along with that video programming, the program title, the channel information, and the like. And third would be entitlement data, which services any particular subscriber has the right to access, and what rights does the subscriber have with respect to those services. For example, can you make a copy of the content for yourself? Now, the open standards bodies that I reference in turn would consist of members representing all stakeholders, the cable operators, other MVPDs, and set-top box manufacturers, content community members, and others. And those standards bodies would be tasked with developing these standards by consensus. In addition to that, cable operators would also have to support a content protection system that would be licensable on reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. And that system could not be substantially controlled by an MVPD or by the MVPD industry writ large. So there is a lot more detail to the FCC's proposal, but that is the core of it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That certainly helps me understand what's going on here. But from what I understand, there's been a large debate about this proposal. It was made back in February, and there's been some back and forth both at the Commission, but then also within industry and on the Hill and elsewhere. Generally, from your perspective, you know, who are the different groups within industry, consumer groups, and the like that support it? Who thus far has come out opposing it, and what are some of the motivations on either side?
A great question. What is striking about this debate is that there's been a widespread outbreak of opposition from virtually all corners, corners that, you know, in virtually every other area are at each other's throat. And so I think in terms of the opposition, for example, there is the content industry and programmers generally. They oppose this provision because this proposal, rather, because they think it's going to facilitate privacy, and they worry about the ability of a third-party set-top box manufacturer both to remove advertisements that are embedded in the programming stream and to insert their own advertisements into that programming stream. Additionally, a number of civil rights organizations have opposed this proposal, and they express concern first and foremost about the impact it would have on minority programmers. For instance, the ability of set-top box manufacturers to change lineups that would be to the detriment of minority programmers, and to be able to monetize the content without compensating fairly minority programmers. Additionally, there has been a great expression of concern by privacy advocates, and their argument is that the privacy requirements that currently apply to cable operators, which are set forth in the Communications Act, those privacy requirements would not apply to third-party set-top box developers. And so you would have essentially a disparate playing field where consumers would not be protected if they had a third-party set-top box. In addition to those basic groups, we have the cable operators themselves, who unsurprisingly are not big fans of this proposal. They would face massive costs for reconfiguring their systems to comply with these rules. And in addition, they worry as well as that there would be a non-level playing field in which they would be at a disadvantage. What is interesting is that these groups have expressed opposition, and that opposition has made its way onto Capitol Hill as well, where we've seen, you know, pretty strong bipartisan opposition. Most strikingly, I think it's notable that Minority Leader Harry Reid in the Senate, the ranking member of the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee, Bill Nelson, the ranking member of the Judiciary, Patrick Leahy, members of the Congressional Black Caucus over on the House side, and members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus have been very outspoken about their opposition. In fact, it seems like every day I read about a new letter sent over by a member or members of Congress saying that they are not big fans of this and they would like the proposal to be revised, if not revoked altogether. And that raises the question, well, who does support it then? And I think there are two basic entities. The first, the companies that would like to make these set-top boxes, most notably Google and TiVo. And secondly, some left-wing public special interest groups that typically support these kinds of regulatory overreaches, Public Knowledge, for example, and Free Press among them. So that's sort of the lay of the land in terms of support and opposition.
Thank you very much. So where does it stand today in the rulemaking process? Is it still being considered?
It is. It is still pending before the Commission. The comment cycle has ended, and so we are now taking stock of what's in the record. My own office is actively involved in reviewing some of the comments, and we are also taking a number of meetings from parties who want to come in to the Commission's offices and discuss some of the concerns that they have with the proposal and suggest possible alternatives. So the conversation is ongoing, even if a concrete time frame for action hasn't yet been set.
Okay. And you registered a dissent here, and you raised a lot of very excellent points in it, and I was hoping you could sort of take us through what it was in particular that gave you pause with this rule, other than a number of the things you've already mentioned to this point.
Absolutely. And for those of you on the call who do not have the fortitude to slog through my leaden prose, I'd be happy to summarize some of the basic points that I made in the dissent. Yeah, the first and foremost one is that this proposal would essentially require consumers to have an additional box in their homes. If you're looking at it from the perspective of a cable company, either you will have to spend a large amount of money reconfiguring your network to comply with these regulations, or you'll have to place a new gateway device in every subscriber's home to make that work. And cable companies have said, look, that latter option is probably going to be less expensive. But that means the consumers will now have an additional box on their home. And I have yet to hear a consumer leap with joy at the prospect of getting another set-top box. I mean, I think what they want is fewer set-top boxes and more of an apps-based approach, which is something I think is more consumer-friendly. The second concern I raise would be the harm to the content creators. I mentioned earlier that some of them are not big fans of this proposal because they worry that it will facilitate privacy. I think in addition to that, the advertising angle is something I think that requires some serious consideration, because nothing in the FCC's proposal would prevent a third-party set-top box manufacturer either from extracting the advertisements from the programming stream or inserting their own advertisements. And although that doesn't seem like a big deal, the advertising is a critical part of the contractual arrangements that allow this programming to be made in the first place and to be distributed to consumers. And so not having any requirements as to the sanctity of that advertising is a problem for content creators. The third one is just a basic matter of timing. I mean, even if everything went smoothly, the scheme won't go into effect until 2 years after the rules are adopted. And if you just think about how quickly this marketplace changes, just over the last several years alone, we've seen the rise of the app economy. New online video distributors are popping up every day. Consumers are migrating to those platforms. The marketplace 2 years from now could be entirely different. And so instead of directing MVPDs and content creators and everybody else down this rabbit hole of 1990s technology, I think we should focus on where the marketplace is going as opposed to where it has been. And all this presumes, of course, that the standards body is going to work. And that was the fourth major concern I expressed, which is that if you are tasking an open standards body composed of members with substantially disparate interests with coming up with a consensus proposal, it is unlikely that it is going to succeed. And I think the best evidence of that is that these very same parties, many of them, participated in the FCC's DSTAC, which is the Downloadable Security Technology Advisory Committee, the report from which sort of kicked off this entire thing. And so they themselves were not able to come up with a consensus. They recommended two different proposals to us. The FCC decided to run with one and disregard the other. So I don't really see the prospect of success in the near future, even if these regulations were a good idea.
Okay. Well, it seems like that what you're saying is that in part the FCC is really looking backward a bit on technology that may be outdated at this point. How did we get to this point in terms of the FCC regulating this space? And are there existing FCC rules and regulations that already apply to set-top boxes today?
There are. This path started in the 1990s when the FCC adopted a rule called the integration ban. And in short, that rule required cable operators to separate the security function, just sort of verifying that a subscriber had the right to access programming, with the navigation function, which is scrolling through your linear programming stream. And the way this rule was implemented was through something called the cable card regime. And the cable cards contained the security function for purposes of our rules. Now, even though people don't disagree with how this marketplace has evolved, what they do agree with, I think, by and large, is that this regime was a failure. I mean, it raised the cost of set-top boxes for consumers. It raised their energy bills because the boxes with the cable cards consumed significantly more energy. And in addition to that, it didn't even secure the end goal of this entire regime, which was to promote more demand from consumers for third-party set-top boxes. And so I think that's why Congress decided to repeal this integration ban at the end of 2015.
Okay. Well, part of the motivation here, it seems like, for this proposed rule is to spur competition for set-top boxes and to sort of disintermediate, I guess, cable companies from the set-top boxes. What, from your perspective, what is the state of competition today? Is it robust? Is it weak? Do we need this kind of a rule? And who is in that market, if there is one, that's competing for set-top boxes? And from your perspective, is the FCC or the majority thinking about competition in this space in the right way? And will this proposal actually incentivize and allow others to compete, which I know is something that's of key importance for you?
Definitely. I think actually your penultimate question is the key one. Is the FCC thinking about competition the right way? I approach this question as I approach most questions, wearing my former antitrust lawyer hat. And if we try to define where competition is, I think it's pretty clear to me that the FCC is taking a myopic, backward-looking view at the marketplace. And as I said, we're essentially doubling down on 1990s technology and excluding the possibility of recognizing where the marketplace is and where it's going. And so I think asking the question how we spur competition for set-top boxes is the wrong question. I think it's almost as if the FCC was asking, how do we spur competition for buggy whips instead of focusing on how to promote more advanced uses of automobiles. And so I think we need to look at the marketplace more broadly. We should look at all the ways that consumers access video programming today. And to be clear, a lot of that includes set-top boxes. Millions of Americans still rely on it for purposes of for consuming video. But I think increasingly there are other ways that are appealing to consumers. And if I could just, with your indulgence, describe my own video consumption habits. This past Sunday, I went on the HBO Go app and streamed Game of Thrones. I watched some of the OJ documentary on ESPN's streaming service. I've caught up on The Americans using FX's app. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I have the Crackle app on my iPhone and my iPad. And so, not to necessarily extrapolate from the personal, but I think it's notable that I, among millions of other Americans, are increasingly relying on internet delivery of video products that was unthinkable a generation ago, certainly 20 years ago when these rules were adopted. And so I think it's pretty clear now that there is substantial and direct competition with set-top boxes, and the FCC should recognize that. The great thing about apps in particular is that it eliminates the need for consumers to have a set-top box at all. You don't need this hardware that is clunky, that is expensive, and that can sometimes break down. And from the cable operator perspective, too, they don't want to have to send somebody out to fix it and to look at it. That adds an expense element for them as well that gets passed on to you. So I think we should take a holistic and forward-looking view of where the marketplace is.
Do you think that the rule as it's proposed could actually harm competition with respect to apps, as you've described?
I definitely think it could, and I think that it could do that in a couple of ways. I mean, first and foremost, whenever a regulatory body with jurisdiction over your company or your industry tells you, okay, we're going to force you into this bottleneck of a regulatory scheme, and you're going to have to focus a lot of effort and a lot of time and money trying to comply with these regulations, of necessity, businesses are not going to have the resources necessary to plan around the more consumer-friendly option, which is the app economy. But secondly, I think that these regulations in particular could indeed affirmatively prevent MVPDs from deploying their own apps. If you look at the FCC's proposal, it says that cable operators and MVPDs cannot develop their own apps until third-party developers have the ability to develop a competitive app of their own. And so you're coming up with the standards that would allow them to do that could take quite a bit of time, and that's ultimately something I don't think any consumer would like to see, certainly not the ones who, like me, rely on apps to consume video.
Seems like the proposal has a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of complexities here, potential implications for competition, as you pointed out. Is the proposal, from your perspective, is it a practical one? And, for instance, I mean, is it this move to potential interoperability, devising an open standard body and having a standard set, is that going to allow for better set-top boxes? Is it going to spur additional competition, or is it going to force us into redirecting resources to deal with regulatory issues and disputes over what the standard should be?
That's a good question. I think, in my view at least, I don't think the proposal is a practical one, either on its own terms or also in terms of the opportunity cost for the commission itself. With respect to the proposal, as I mentioned earlier, the FCC's key proposal is to delegate the formulation of the relevant technical standards to these open standards bodies. And again, these open standards bodies would include all stakeholders, and they would have to agree to any such standards by consensus. And so, you know, look, given the level of disagreement in this proceeding that we've seen between MVPDs and advocates of the Commission's proposals, I tend to have serious doubt that these open standards bodies would ever be able to, you know, reach a consensus on technical standards. And you know, in addition to that, even if it were an impasse to be reached, then the Commission's proposal doesn't say what exactly would happen next. Would we end up trying to mediate and force a solution through on our own? I mean, that's something that we're not exactly expert in doing, and I have questions about whether we even have the legal authority under Section 629 to do such a thing. Secondly, if we don't end up taking action, then essentially this entire enterprise was for naught. I mean, we sent all of these companies on a wild goose chase for something that never ended up coming to fruition. In terms of the opportunity cost, too, I think that the agency – this is emblematic of a problem the agency has had of late, which is that it is focusing significant resources within the agency and, of course, through the industry on a problem from yesteryear. This is one example of it, as I've talked about, but there are others, too. I mean, the proposed reclassification of certain over-the-top or Internet-delivered video services as MVPDs, essentially applying a number of the regulations we currently apply to cable companies to over-the-top distributors. And that was something that the chairman proposed about a year, maybe perhaps a year and a half ago. And there, too, it was another case of the agency looking at a marketplace that did not have anybody crying out for FCC intervention and saying, we want to impose these obsolete regulations on some of these new competitors. And I was one of the first commissioner to be outspoken about it, but I certainly was riding wave of what turned out to be a pretty substantial opposition. And I think whenever the FCC focuses everybody's attention on, you know, regulatory rabbit holes like this, it ends up distracting from the FCC's core mission, which I think is, you know, first and foremost, to ensure that its regulations keep up with the marketplace of today, and secondly, to promote to the maximum extent possible the private sector incentives to develop new products and services for consumers. And on each of those criteria, I think the FCC has failed, certainly in this proceeding.
Well, in terms of the opposition and some of the issues that you've seen crop up over the last several months as this has been debated, you know, I've been reading reports, news accounts that Congress is considering, you know, a rider to FCC funding that would require the agency to conduct further study, to do an impact study before implementing any of this proposed rule. From your perspective, is that a good idea, a bad idea? What's your reaction to that?
Well, as I expressed earlier, I do have some serious concerns with the Commission's proposal, and so I would welcome any effort by Congress to require the agency to conduct an impact study before it implements any proposed rule. I mean, I think that it's essentially a way of ensuring that through statute that the Commission do an upfront cost-benefit analysis and make sure that before it adopts any regulations along these lines that the impact of those regulations is considered and considered carefully. That's certainly not something the Commission has done in this proceeding or in many others where it has been ambitious in its regulatory scope. So I do worry that the Commission's timeline on this particular proposal is being shaped more by political considerations, frankly, than sound policy making. I mean, as I said, there's no outcry from the countryside for set-top box regulation reform. And so I think we shouldn't be rushing to adopt this proposal before a new president takes office. And I think that at the very least here, as with any proceeding, we should do our due diligence and make sure that we get it done right as opposed to getting it done right now. And the touchstone obviously should be that whatever rules are adopted are going to benefit consumers. And I think that's something that Congress, members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are focusing on. I think it's also notable that just last week, the administration set forth its opposition to the set-top box rider that passed by the House Appropriations Committee, and that's not surprising since the president backed the commission's proposal in April. But I think ultimately we will hopefully see an overwhelming majority of both houses of Congress supporting this provision.
And let me ask you, focusing a little bit more on some of the practical implications for consumers that you've touched on to this point. You know, one of the things that's come up is that we could end up with two set-top boxes in our homes, rather. rather than one as a consequence of this proposal, should it move forward. What are the incentives under the rule that would create that circumstance where you might end up with multiple set-top boxes in your home?
Well, I think if you are a cable company and these regulations were adopted in some form, then you would have one of two options. Either you would have to take a look at your network and figure out, okay, how do we reconfigure this network to comply with these regulations? How do we make sure that our network is able to supply the content delivery data, the service discovery data, and entitlement data to third parties for use in those third parties' set-top boxes? Now, that would be a pretty costly affair, both in terms of the actual monetary cost for reconfiguring the network, but also the cost of renegotiating a number of agreements. I mean, typically, as most folks on the call probably know, these MVPDs have to engage in extensive contract negotiations with content providers. And in those contracts that are ultimately reached, which enable the content to be distributed, there is an extensive amount of discussion about how will we protect this data? How does the content have to be presented? What kinds of channel lineup placement should we think about for this content? What kinds of preferences does the content provider have in terms of allowing subscribers to access that content, and how should they be allowed to use it? I mean, all that stuff goes into these contracts, and so these cable companies would have to thread the needle to revisit those contractual arrangements with all the content providers, and then make sure they are complying with our rules. And so I think that's a pretty substantial expense that we're imposing on these MVPDs. By comparison, they could say, well, instead of doing that, we could simply ensure that there's another gateway device in the customer's home. In addition to the cable operator, a set-top box that we provide, there could be another gateway device that would simply do essentially the same thing. And so what I've heard firsthand from cable operators is that, look, that's a much less expensive option for us. And so essentially all of these third-party set-top box manufacturers would all these set-top boxes would be going into these consumers' homes, and consumers would ultimately not be better off. In addition to that, the fact that some of the contractual arrangements would still apply would put cable operators in a very strange situation. Add to that the problem about privacy as well. There are still a lot of gnashing of teeth about what exactly are going to be the privacy requirements on cable operators. And in addition to that, one of the pieces which we haven't had a chance to discuss yet is the enforcement mechanism. So under the Communications Act as it stands, the FCC does not have jurisdiction over third-party or would-be third-party set-top box manufacturers like Google. Nonetheless, the agency is aware of the political difficulty of admitting that. So what they said was, we're going to adopt essentially a vicarious enforcement scheme through which cable operators and other current set-top box manufacturers are going to be responsible for certifying that third-party set-top box manufacturers aren't violating privacy protections, essentially making one company responsible for the conduct of another. Now, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to realize that there are substantial legal concerns with this, in addition to the practical concern that, it's difficult for any company to be able to certify to that. And so that's another problem, I think, that is standing in the way of this proposal moving forward.
And when you talk about privacy implications for consumers here and this issue of self-certification, What streams of data could, in theory, a third-party manufacturer gather from a consumer through one of these new set-top boxes?
Well, many have suggested that the primary reason for a third-party set-top box manufacturer is to want to enter this marketplace is that the data stream, the data that could pull from the set-top box is highly useful. They could analyze that data and try to figure out how consumers behave when they are watching some of this video, and then tailor advertising to those particular consumers. And so it's a very lucrative, potentially a very lucrative marketplace. For example, if they know that you are streaming a certain program, then they can figure out which advertising is most likely to appeal to people who watch that program, and they can go to advertisers in that marketplace and say, look, instead of trying to advertise through the incumbent cable company, we have the ability to know exactly what the consumer is watching and when and in what format and at what time. And it would be a way for them to monetize the data. And that, I think, is one of the key things that privacy advocates have been worried about, is that this data from the set-top boxes involves some of the most sensitive information that consumers have, and what they watch and when they watch and who watches and the rest are things that most people want to be protected. And if there is no privacy protection under the FCC's proposal, then it's essentially the Wild West from their perspective. And that's not something I think that many consumers want to see.
And currently, do consumers enjoy some degree of privacy protection under cable subscriber privacy rules?
They do. It's set forth in statute, and there are FCC rules implementing those statutory obligations that require cable operators to respect the privacy requirements that Congress thought were important to be respected.
Right. And so, but the current proposal, as it's drafted, would not extend those protections out to third-party manufacturers. Is that sort of the principal concern here?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Well, that certainly does have far-reaching implications for I think everyone. On the consumer side, the in terms of companies, though, you'd mentioned earlier that the third-party manufacturers will be able to use this data for commercial purposes. Are there any sort of copyright issues or other legal issues that people have raised with respect to that possible outgrowth of this proposal?
Yeah, copyright is featured fairly prominently. In fact, a great many members of Congress have expressed concern about that, in particular members of the Judiciary Committee and the Commerce Committee on both the House and Senate side. And the argument they make is a pretty simple one. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that these copyright rules are somewhat complex, I mean, the essential idea is that if you create something and if you enter into a contract with somebody to distribute that something, it is dangerous to your intellectual property rights for that content to be distributed by somebody else who is not a party to those contracts, who is not bound by any of those restrictions. And it raises the problem of things like piracy and, as I said again, the deletion or insertion of advertisements. And that's something the content industry has been very outspoken about. And again, I can't understate how unusual it is, because typically over the past 4 years that I've been a commissioner, I can't think of another example when you've seen the video distribution industry and the video production industry coming together to say, we agree on something. I mean, typically they are fervent opponents of each other on virtually all issues. But here, I think it's notable that both sides have come together for different reasons to suggest that this is not a proposal that is going to serve anybody's interests.
And yet, it still moves forward, at least at this point, which is surprising. And has the administration sort of more broadly weighed in on this at all?
Yes. So the president in April came out in favor of the set-top box proposal, and he explicitly said that he thought this was an area where the FCC could and should get involved. And he suggested that the purpose was to introduce more competition into the marketplace. And obviously, it's unusual for the president to weigh in specifically into FCC proceedings, but I think that my basic response would be, I agree that we need to make sure that our regulations give consumers the best possible experience when they're consuming video. But the way I would get there would be a different one. Instead of unlocking the box, as the FCC has said in its primary hashtag on Twitter, my goal would be to eliminate the box, to focus on apps and other sort of more advanced technologies like that that would be cheaper and easier to use, just more consumer friendly. And notably, I think the cable companies and some others have come forward recently and suggested an alternative path to the FCC's proposal. In particular, they've said, we don't like the FCC's proposal as endorsed by the president. What we would rather do is focus on an app-based approach, and that's what the FCC should be encouraging. That's a proposal I'm still studying. We're taking some meetings on it, and we'll see where it goes. But I think it's promising to hear that there are some people who are still focused on something that is more in line with consumer expectations and consumer practices, as opposed to the Commission's proposal, which again is just doubling down on this 90s technology of set-top boxes.
Well, Commissioner, thank you very much for your remarks, your thoughtful responses to the questions. I think we are about 40 minutes in, so Will, I'd like to go ahead and open it up for questions from the audience.
All right. Thank you, Alex, and thank you again, Commissioner, for that excellent presentation.
Thank
you. We'll now open the floor to audience questions. In a moment, we will all hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, enter star and then the pound. Okay, again, if you'd like to request the floor, enter star and then pound, and we will put you right on the phone with Commissioner Ajit Pai. While we wait to see who might ring in here, I want to make a quick programming announcement. We will be back with another Teleforum call on Monday, the first installment of this year's election law series that will be sponsored by our Free Speech and Election Law Practice Group. That call is titled Nomination and Election Rules. That will be on Tuesday, July 5th at 1. We hope to hear from a lot of you then. But for now, we'll go to our first caller. This is the only question we have on the line, so if at any point during this question and answer you'd like to join the queue and be our second caller, please enter star and then the pound key.
I'm glad this is the only question because I've got a number of them. What's the difference between a TiVo and a set-top box? I mean, if TiVo already has the data you're talking about, why would cable companies have to go recreate the data for other types of boxes? I'll just fire away with everything I've got right now. Several years ago, I went looking for a DVR.
Caller, we do have a second question, actually. If you'd mind ringing in with your additional questions after we take the second question, that would be great.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
So the basic question was how, if TiVo already has a set-top box, why would we, or what's the need for this proposal?
Additional data. Isn't the data already there? Why are they complaining that they would have to create the three types of data?
Well, I think essentially the FCC's proposal is that the FCC's argument is that even though TiVo currently has a product that a number of people use, nonetheless, what we need to promote more competition in the marketplace, not that I agree with, this is the FCC's argument, is that we need a standardized format so that anybody can create a third-party set-top box that could then extract this data. And so I think that's part of the reason why TiVo and other companies support the FCC's proposal is that they want to be able to get this content delivery data, the service discovery data, and the entitlement data in a way that they can either manipulate however they like to deliver through a third-party set-top box. Now, TiVo it does have all the functions as cable set-top boxes, or doesn't have all the functions of cable set-top box now. But what they've argued is that we need access to those three different buckets of information in order to deliver essentially an identical or similar product.
All right, we'll go to our second caller now. And caller, you'll have a chance to enter star and then the pound key again to get back in the line.
Hi, this is Andrew Heimert. My question, and thank you for the very helpful articulation of the debate, is you've suggested that we should be looking towards the next generation, which presumably eliminates the sort of intermediary of the set-top box and replaces it with an app-type environment. Presumably, the cable companies would each provide their own apps for loading on a consumer's device, whether it be a television directly, an Apple TV, like some of the apps you referred to, a Roku device, or whatever other devices might be developed in the future. Does that not raise the same set of issues about interoperability between the cable company developed apps and the hardware that they would run on and then display on the consumer's television or other screen? And if not, why not? Thank you.
That's a great question, and nice to hear from you, Andrew. I hope all is well. So I don't think that it would raise all of the same issues. I think that the FCC is looking at that issue and is mindful of it, but nonetheless, I think, number one, that if depending on how the app economy evolved, you wouldn't necessarily see any problem along those lines. For example, a number of content programmers have created their own apps so they can directly connect with consumers, and that's how a number of different consumers access video increasingly. And so the only question there is essentially the basics of do you have hardware like an iPad to convert your device into a television screen, essentially, and do you have a Wi-Fi connection? Secondly, the app is a closed environment, and so it reduces concerns about privacy and piracy. And so I think some of the concerns you would have elsewhere are not necessarily manifested in the app area. And finally, third, I think it's notable that Roku and a number of other competitors in this space have said they don't support the FCC's proposal. And they've said that the regulations would be far more counterproductive than the status quo or than where the marketplace is going on its own. And so I think for those reasons, I certainly don't think that where we're heading is necessarily going to be bad for consumers in the absence of FCC regulation.
All right, we'll go back to our first caller now for a couple more questions. Please do, if you're interested in asking your question, hit star and then the pound key, and we will be sure to get you on the line.
Hi again. I want to make sure I've got the proper conception of what we're talking about here in terms of these devices. We are speaking of essentially DVRs, correct? Digital video recorders people can use to time shift when they watch things, and there would be no requirement for even an internet connection to use an app or anything like that. You record something, you can come back to it 6 months later and watch it. That's the type of device we're talking about, correct?
Not quite. So that's one of the functions of the devices that we're talking about. But time shifting is not the only one. It's also a programming discovery, programming access, how the programming is laid out in front of you so you can figure out which programs are available. It's sort of all of the features that allow you to pick out what program you want to watch and when you want to watch it, and even on what device you want to watch it. You would require an internet connection for things like the delivery of video over an app, for example, either through a cellular connection or through Wi-Fi.
Thank you so much. Will, we're almost out of time. Will, I just wanted to make sure that there weren't any other questions.
Yes, I do want to make a final call for questions here. I think we have time to answer one more. Please enter star and then the pound key to ask your question of Commissioner Pai, or you'll have to wait until maybe next year to hear him again on the teleforum. Seeing none, though, do you have any closing thoughts, Alex or Commissioner?
Commissioner, I want to turn it over to you. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. If you have any closing thoughts, please, the floor is yours.
No, I just want to say thank you, Alex, for leading the conversation, and thanks again to the Federal Society and for the folks who posed questions or otherwise were listening on the line. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. It's you sometimes wonder when you're at the agency, does anyone pay attention to what we do? Some of what we do is so arcane and obscure, but it's good to hear that there's widespread interest in the agency's labors. And I look forward to continuing the conversation. You can follow me on Twitter, at AjeetPaiFCC. You can always email me, ajeet.pai@fcc.gov. I would certainly welcome comments from any members of the public who have an opinion about what I say or what the FCC is doing.
Thank you again, Commissioner. We really appreciate you taking the time today. And thanks for
your
Well, on behalf of the Federal Society, I want to give one more big thank you to everyone, including our audience members and questioners. Thanks, everyone, for dialing in. We hope to hear from you next week, Tuesday at 1 p.m., to discuss some election law issues. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.